good morning, everybody, and welcome to the second day of the March Interpretations Committee meeting. We're going to start this morning as planned with agenda item number 9, questions that have been raised about the application of IFRIC 15 dealing with contracts for the construction of real estate. Fabienne, would you like to introduce the topic to us? I should also say we have April Pittman, who is sitting in with us just in case anybody has any questions about the future of the board's current project on revenue recognition, which may have some limited impact on our considerations today. Fabienne?
Good morning. The committee received a request for clarification on the meaning of continuous transfer in IFRIC 15. The staff gathered inputs from standard setters in several jurisdictions and different indicators that an entity analyzes when determining whether the transfer of control and risks and rewards for off-plan sales is on a continuous basis or occurs only at a point in time. Those indicators are listed in paragraph 26 of the paper. The staff note that those indicators are commonly used across jurisdictions, but they seem to be insufficient in some jurisdictions for reaching a conclusion on whether the transfer of control is on a continuous basis or at one point in time. The staff identified that in those jurisdictions where characterizing the transfer of control is controversial, relevant public authorities are involved in addition to direct parties to the off-plan sale agreement. The role of those authorities is to protect the buyer if the developer defaults because they had the power to assign a new developer to complete the construction. Because of the involvement of those authorities, constituents in those jurisdictions find it difficult to conclude whether control lies with the developer or the buyer. The staff note that two views exist as to the meaning of continuous transfer in the specific situation I've just described. View one is that the buyer receives control of the asset in its partially completed state while construction takes place. And view two is that the seller loses control and the buyer receives protective rights, although the transfer to the buyer only takes place at a later date, for example, upon completion of the construction. View 1 is analysed in paragraph 33 to 35 of the paper, and view 2, paragraphs 36 to 38. Given the agenda criteria assessment, and more specifically the existing diversity in practice, the staff recommend that the committee should take the issue onto its agenda. Do you agree with the recommendation?
All right, open to comments or questions to Fabienne for some explanation. Ruth?
I agree that it should be taken onto the agenda. It's a current practice issue for jurisdictions trying to apply IFRIC 15. There is diversity in practice. I'm interested to hear where the revenue project would lead us on this particular issue, but I don't think it's necessarily relevant to this because we are trying to apply IFRIC 15 now and people are very confused out there as to how to apply it. And I think we really do need to focus on what IFRIC 15 says and to clarify it. So I agree with taking it onto the agenda.
Thank you. Lawrence?
Same thing. I do agree that it should be taken on the agenda. There is effectively diversity in practice or difficulty applying IFRIC 15 because environments are different. You have different legal structures, but many times the objective is the same, to protect the purchaser. And so in that case, is it appropriate that you have different outcomes if the objective is the same? And I do believe it is really important to liaise with the revenue recognition project. I hear what Ruth is saying, that we are interpreting IFRIC 15 currently, but I do believe that we will be enlightened by progress on the revenue project as well.
Thank you. Enlightenment's always good. Alan, do you want to come in?
Just comments on the revenue project, just so you know where it's at. The IFRIC 15 will be absorbed into the standard. The issue is of course, one of timing, because the boards contemplated last week setting an effective date for revenue leases and insurance of no earlier than 1 January 2015. And they didn't do that because they just want a bit more information, but I think that you can take that as a signal that there'll be quite a long lead time before those projects come in. And I think the issue here, obviously, is that you want to give guidance to help with the existing requirements given such a long lead time. And that the tricky bit will just be balancing it, because given that the revenue standard will absorb it for 15 and hopefully, and I think quite clearly, deal with what continuous transfer means, you presumably don't want to add words that are different. So in terms of the timing, I think we're going to have the draft should be ready by the end of May. So it's just a matter of getting the timing right as to, presumably absorbing those words and getting them into an interpretation and then out. So and making sure that it's obviously, and we had the discussion earlier this week, it would have been a modification of IFRIC 15 so that it clearly then just basically disappears when the new standard comes into effect.
Can I just ask a question on that in terms of being aware of what's in the revenue standard? The thing that worries me about it, though, is that although we're saying the revenue standard will replace IFRIC 15 or will absorb it, it might change it completely.
Yeah.
And that's what concerns me. Is if it's going to change it completely, then I think we do need to know about it. And then we're left with the dilemma of interpreting the IFRIC 15 as it is now.
Let me just bring us back then to where we are. There's a question that's been raised about the application of IFRIC 15. April is here to answer questions on where the revenue project is going, but I think as you're all suspecting, that the revenue project is completely replacing IAS 11 and IAS 18 and all the IFRICs that we've had to issue to fill in the gaps. It's a complete package that's going to be issued, intended to be applied completely. So the question for us is not to pick a piece out that we think is relevant, because that may not then give the same balance. So we're not trying to permit early adoption of a part of a standard. And we haven't yet decided, if we are going to issue an interpretation. I've heard two people say that that's what they would like to do, but there are other views that we're going to get as well. But we have to, and Ruth made the point, so I'll reemphasize it, we have to deal with the situation now until 2015 or whenever anybody early adopts for those jurisdictions, those companies that are wanting to apply the current requirements of IAS 18 and IFRIC 15, and to perhaps consider to give them some guidance in the light that it's not going to be conflicting with the way that the board is going, contradictory or otherwise, that we'd like to know that we're directionally going in the same area. Otherwise, it's likely that the board is not going to approve a final interpretation, and then we would have been wasting our time as well. So I think we need to understand a little bit more about how the revenue recognition proposals tentatively, currently, not finalized, might affect this. And in terms of timing, I think this is an issue that we're going to be looking at again in July when the final document, because we have that assurance. It may not be published by then, I think, but it will be at least balloted and final at that stage, so we'll know what the words are, if there are any words that we were wanting to use from that document to incorporate in here. But seeing as we've got just about everybody's light on, let's go around. Jean-Louis?
I quite remember when we discussed this issue when working on IFRIC 15, and I think that in some jurisdiction in Europe, the notion of continuous transfer was quite clear and was quite applied in the same way by the building activities. But I understand that in other region, it's quite a problem, and I am not sure, looking to the two views, I believe that the view one is close to what we said in IFRIC 15, but if there is a considerable difficulty to apply it, maybe we need an further interpretation. But I think that we should keep in close relationship with the new 18 standard. So But if interpretation is needed, in the meantime, why not?
From your passcode. Thank you. Your passcode is confirmed. When you hear the tone, you will be the first person to join the meeting. The line will be silent until another person joins.
Okay, nobody speak. Tak.
Yes. I understand we've got to do something to do with it, but I feel some danger to provide some guideline or indicator now. Because I have 3 points. First, the timing. I think we could say we take some essence from the current revenue recognition out and allow them to apply earlier. But as everybody pointed out, there is no guarantee that everything will be consistent. So it's timing-wise, it's a little bit dangerous. And the second point is, this is a big argument, but I have a big concern with the relation, interaction between local regulators' work and the interpretation. And a country like Singapore, they have a matured legal system. Their laws are well discussed and well considered and built in the social system. So their law normally has a precise rule, like Singapore has in the housing operations. So in that case, they have matured laws. So on the other hand, IFRS is principle based. So somebody has got to do something for the connecting those two. Then the point is that the job of IASB, is that the job of the local regulators? When they have a precise laws and somebody has to got some interpretation, but you could say that it's an interpretation on their own law rather than interpretation of IFRS. So therefore, in that case, it may be the local regulators' work to make an interpretation on their own law. So it's a big things we have to discuss. And the third point is, of course, everybody knows that the project of revenue recognition is the purpose of the revenue recognition is the simplification. So once we started to simplify the current complicated rules and abolish hundreds of rules, say, in the United States, but if we start producing guidelines, then in the end it will end up come back to where we started. So I think in the beginning, good start is very important. So now issues are raised from Asia, but in the future, a lot of issues will be raised from everywhere. So it's a good, important timing that we have to make a good start. So therefore, I feel some danger on providing indicator or guideline now.
So just to be clear then, Tak, you are not particularly as enthusiastic as the other speakers about taking this onto our agenda. Okay.
Not enthusiastic.
Andrew.
Well, I'd be also nervous about taking it on the agenda. I think we discussed this concept quite a lot when we first dealt with IFRIC 15. Found a number of difficulties with it, and unless we find an absolute bulletproof solution when we look at it again, I'm not quite sure it's going to eliminate diversity in practice. And I think, you know, focus on the revenue recognition project, get that right. I mean, all we're going to do is, at the most, by even if we got a bulletproof solution, which I very much doubt, to be honest, we're only going to buy 2 years, aren't we? If we did an interpretation now, this would be effective 2013, by the time we sorted it out?
Well, because would only be an interpretation. It would be effective 90 days after publication, and depending on how long it takes us to get this through, then that would be sometime in 2012.
I'm seriously concerned we could waste our time to no great end.
No, understand, Andrew. Sean?
Yeah, I'm also quite concerned in taking on this item on the agenda. One of the concern I have is that it would be very would be inclined for sure to look at the Revenue Retention Project, and I was actually wondering if we can come up with a very different response to because continuous transfer is a concept. It's not so much fact-driven. I guess we will come up with a concept of what continuous transfer means, and if the concept is written in the Revenue Recognition Project, it will be difficult to come up with something different. And if we come up with what's in the Revenue Recognition Project, then are we introducing early the Revenue Recognition guideline or concept? The other thing is, as I was reading that, I'm very concerned about, although it may be in the context of IFRIC 15, continuous transfer, I believe, is also something that may impact accounting under IAS 11. I'm not sure about that, but we'll have to be extremely prudent with any guidance on continuous transfer, because I think what you don't want to do is to shake the IAS 11 accounting with guidance that will be imported there by analogy, and that will have extremely pervasive effect while we're waiting for the Revenue Recognition Project to come up. So my biggest fear is that can we scope that narrow enough so that it's only for that fact pattern? And since continuous transfer, it's kind of a concept, I don't see why this will not be applicable by analogy elsewhere, but that remains to be seen, but that's my concern.
Well, hopefully, Jean, because this idea of continuous transfer was created because the contracts that we were considering then were not contracts that were accounted for under IAS 11. So it's specifically, if you're not under IAS 11, then you consider this concept of continuous transfer under IAS 18. There may be similar economic circumstances between construction service contracts and what we're talking about here, but I think the accounting would be fairly clear in IAS 11 that there would be no need for someone to look for an analogy with another standard to determine how they would account for revenue under IAS 11. But I sort of heed the warning that you've made there. And Joanna?
I too have some grave concerns about taking this on. A number of the comments that have already been said, but my major ones are the interaction with the revenue recognition, which at the end of the day is about continuous transfer, and the questions around what we come up with. Are we second-guessing if we say something different? In fact, do we end up interpreting the new revenue standard? And I am aware, in fact, that Singapore, again, have got some real concerns with where the revenue project is going. So, you know, and this comes back to Tat's point about an individual jurisdiction. Yes, this is wider than that, but their regulator has made some statements, and that is also an issue with where continuous transfer and the revenue recognition. So I'm really, really worried about that, and in fact whether we should be dealing with something that is a particular jurisdiction's regulator perhaps driving something. As I said, I know it is wider. I also, as John said, am very concerned. Interestingly, the submission acknowledges that judgment is required and then says, but this goes to the very essence of
control, which actually makes it very wide. Fabienne has tried to narrow the scope, but actually I'm not sure by so doing that that actually answers the question in the submission and will help them, which then widens it, which means, again, are we coming back to 11? Are we widening it to the full revenue recognition? And then finally, actually, in terms of the timing, and it links to the others in terms of the second guessing, if we come up with something, you know, it may not be what anybody is looking for in terms of the answer they want, because revenue recognition comes out with saying something different. Because at the end of the day, I know it's 18 that we're trying to do now, but actually this concept is a very similar concept. But so, sorry, to sum up, I would not take it onto the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Scott?
I too would rather not take it on the agenda, for many of the reasons that people have suggested. I don't have huge concerns about it, but you know, in the end, taking everything into account, I don't think we buy ourselves much other than, you know, 2 years, as Andrew said, maybe a bit more, of getting new guidance out for an issue that affects a portion of one industry in some jurisdictions. And I think in order to do this justice, we wind up doing implementation guidance for your laws and your laws and your laws. You know, Fabienne boiled it down to one issue. View one, buyer, you know, the buyer needs to receive control. View two, as long as the seller loses control. I think I can answer that real quickly, and I can do it in an agenda decision. What word of transfer of control to the buyer do you not understand? So if your question is, does the buyer need to get control or does the seller just need to lose control, I can answer that. We already did. And I think going beyond that, I think to do a good job winds up just being implementation guidance. And what we might be able to do something very useful for Singapore. It would take time. It wouldn't come that far in advance of the new revenue recognition standard. And then we would have to do it again for Korea. Then we would have to do it again for China, you know, wherever these protective laws exist. So my inclination is to not take it on the agenda, clarify in the agenda committee decision, if people agree, that the words say transfer to the buyer, and move on.
Thank you. Gita?
I think IFRIC 15 is an interpretation of IS 18, if I understand that correctly. And I looked into IS 18, paragraph 14b, which clearly says that revenue can be recognized when the seller or the entity does not retain control. It doesn't talk about the buyer getting control. So I think the wording is not that clear. I'm sorry about that, but that's the way IS 18
is. That to be fair, is only part of the story, because that's a question of whether or not the buyer, the seller, retains managerial control, which is another aspect. That you transfer the risks and rewards to the buyer and don't retain control that is similar to managerial control.
Well, Bob, they talk about managerial involvement and control. So that seems to be two different things. Otherwise, I could have used just one word. The only reason why I mentioned that is that I'm not 100% sure that the standard in IFRIC 15 is clear. I think there is room for interpretation. I would rather like to take it on the agenda, because I know it's a huge issue, not only in one country. I've spoken to three countries before we had this meeting here, and they all have the same problem. The regulators thought about IFRIC 15 and came up with a decision. And I can imagine that in other jurisdictions here in Europe, people may rethink again IFRIC 15 when they see how IFRIC 15 is applied in other jurisdictions. So I'm also aware of the problem, and that's why I appreciate that April is here, that the revenue recognition team is thinking about, and that's what I understand, thinking about how can we define continuous transfer of control, especially when you have work in progress. And I think that that's the problem. I can see pretty straightforward definition of control when you have finalized something, but work in progress is another thing. So I would rather like to have a fast or quick interpretation out there, but that takes into consideration what the revenue recognition team is doing, because if we have an interpretation out there for 3 or 4 years and others then start applying IS, the new revenue recognition standard, early, which gives a different view, then that would be the worst solution we have. So I would like to take it on the agenda, deal with it as quickly as we can, but liaise with the revenue recognition team so that we do not give another interpretation that we will see in the new revenue recognition standard. The last point I wanted to make is I'm not so much concerned that, yeah, we are dealing with IS 18 and that's the new revenue recognition standard, because when we did IFRIC 15, I was asking myself, where is this concept of continuous transfer of control coming from in IS 18? So I think I wouldn't have a problem with coming up with a conclusion that is regarding the views of the revenue recognition team for the new standard.
Can I ask you a question for clarification, though, Guido, because you mentioned a couple of times in your comments about the actions of the regulators. If the regulators had not given a ruling on this, would you have been concerned, or do you think that your clients would have perhaps come up with a conclusion that they do have continuous transfer, or was the role of the regulators a significant influencing factor?
Well, the way I understand the process has been that the regulators didn't come up with an interpretation, but it was all the constituents around the table. It was the preparers, the auditors, the regulators. And I've seen some papers from Singapore, from Korea, where they jointly came up with a conclusion. So it's not only the regulators, it were all constituents involved in this conclusion.
But the issue that has been raised in Singapore, for example, or in Brazil, which is a country you didn't mention, where the securities regulators got involved, is that there is something that is official within those jurisdictions, and that the question has come back to us because some people feel that that official position is not a correct interpretation of IFRS. So I'm trying to understand if, in fact, I'm assuming that IFRIC 15 is correct because that's gone through its due process. So what it says is what it says. But the question is now, are people misapplying IFRS, in which case it's not a question of the interpretation committee to look at the misapplication, or is it that there is some genuine doubt as to how the requirements of IFRIC 15 should be applied in a particular set of circumstances?
No, I would say it's the latter. Problems people have problems with defining what continuous transfer of control means, especially in situations where work is in progress. That's a problem. I have problems with defining that too. I appreciate that there is a list of indicators in paragraph 26 in this paper, which includes legal transfer of legal title as one indicator, probably a strong indicator, but there are a lot of other indicators in there that I understand would apply in the situations, for instance, in Singapore or Korea.
I'm just trying to understand why people need our help to solve their local problems. Bernd?
Yeah, I have no appetite taking this onto the agenda for the various reasons that have already been said. But also, for one more reason, the concept of continuous transfer was the principle that we tried to develop in IFRIC 15. And if we now see that the principle, or if we acknowledge that the principle doesn't work, we either did a very poor job in the first place, which would mean to me that we have to withdraw IFRIC 15 altogether and start from square one, or we start with implementation guidance, as Scott said, meaning that we try to take our principle and then give implementation guidance criteria how to apply it, which is something we don't want to do. We always said we don't want to do implementation guidance. So I don't think that it
we will come up with a better solution if we take it on. I think we will end up in endless discussions what continuous transfer is, if we want to stick to the concept or maybe do something else. So I think we should leave it as it is and maybe do it within an agenda decision, as Scott suggested. So I don't think that we did a poor job. I think we introduced a principle, and I think it's a matter of applying the principle.
Yeah, now normally, under these circumstances, I would have said there's sufficient people that have recommended we don't take this onto the agenda, so we would conclude the discussion there and think about an agenda decision wording. But in the circumstances, I think it would be helpful just to add a little bit of context, because a number of you have said you would like to know what actually is happening in the revenue recognition project, and so I'm not trying to tempt fate here at all. But April has willingly come along to volunteer to give a short description of this particular aspect of the revenue recognition project and perhaps to answer some questions. And so I suppose we should start by saying if you think that the board has found it necessary to actually deal with construction of real estate contracts as a special topic, or if you're dealing with them in the context of the broader principles of revenue recognition. And when it comes to, as we've called it, continuous transfer in these circumstances, specifically where there is a contract to supply a piece of property at the end of a period of time that has to be constructed, whether or not, in fact, there is any particular guidance that is included, application requirement, perhaps rather than guidance, is included in the tentative proposal so far. So.
Thanks, Bob. I think Bob's initial comments at the beginning of the meeting were quite insightful, because it will in some respects be difficult to knit the articulation of the board's tentative decisions into IFRIC 15 itself. They come from completely different approaches. The new proposals of the board started with a clean sheet of paper. So the current revenue recognition guidance is based on IS 11, which deals with construction contracts, and IS 18, which splits its guidance between goods and services. And IFRIC 15 tried to approach the problem by clarifying what was in IS 11 and then introducing or expanding on the idea of a good which transfers continuously. Now, for the revenue recognition exposure draft, it doesn't have split models between goods, services, construction contracts. It's just based on one principle, really, that you recognize revenue for goods and services when the good or service transfers to the customer. Now, the articulation in the exposure draft was that transfer would take place when the customer controlled the good or service. And the overwhelming response that the boards had in the comment letters was that the idea of control as a true depiction of transfer works very well for goods, but it doesn't work particularly well for services. So anything that you think of as control and the indicators of control that were in the exposure draft, like legal title, physical possession, unconditional requirement to pay, those fit very well with goods, not with services. So the boards in their redeliberations in January and February, because this is at the core of the model, looked at this again and said, right, control was the tool that we used for transfer at the time of the exposure draft. It works for goods, so we'll keep that tool for goods. And they will carry forward, I think, a lot of the guidance that was in the exposure draft. They have also added to that the indicator of risk and rewards. I think for a number of years, people have had an idea, which perhaps we've unwittingly sort of increased, that you either use risk and rewards or you use control. But to some extent, risk and rewards is just a facet of control, and that in assessing control, you would look to risk and rewards. So the boards have sort of expanded slightly on the control indicators. Then when they considered transfer of the service to the customer, the real question that people had in the exposure draft responses was, how do you know if a service is transferring continuously? And so that's another little sort of technical problem in the knitting if we went straight into IFRIC 15, because IFRIC 15 is looking at the continuous transfer of a good. And the discussion in the current board's thinking and the project is that continuous transfer means that it's a service. So I think there have been some helpful decisions on that. The boards have, you may remember that the project, the model that we're looking at under the revenue project, is based on identifying a contract, identifying separate performance obligations within that contract, allocating the transaction price to each of those performance obligations, and then recognizing revenue as the performance obligation satisfied by transfer. So a crucial thing from a construction contract point of view is how many performance obligations do you have? What are you accounting for in that construction contract? And some of the concerns raised were that every single brick or electrician hour shouldn't be a separate performance obligation. So in a decision last month, the boards have tentatively decided that if the good or service is to provide a number of goods and services to the customer, and if that service includes integrating those goods and services into one whole deliverable to the customer, then that would be one performance obligation. And so I think the effect of that will be that for many construction contracts, as they are accounted for today, they will continue to just be one performance obligation. The boards then said, right, if you have a performance obligation to provide this integrated service of providing goods and services to your customer, to create one item for that customer, how do you know if that transfers continuously? And stage one in that process is exactly the same as the exposure draft. You know that it's transferred to the customer if the customer controls the work in progress. Now, that is quite clear for a number of people. So, for example, under the VEFA requirements in France, the customer at inception has an interest in the land itself. It's the customer's asset that's being built. It's a service to the customer. There are a number of other, if you're incorporating the client's IPR into the finished product, it will probably be that the customer is controlling that IPR. The classic example is if you're building a defense contract and you've got secret weapons know-how going into it as you build, the government or the defense authority will keep close control over that work in progress. It also, I think, the board's guidance has given additional guidance by taking on the risk of rewards. So a number of the other factors which are currently used under IS 18 to assess whether risk and rewards are transferred, they will now be in there. And the paper which went to the board in January did suggest that in the staff view, most construction contracts would satisfy that control transferring requirement. There are alternative ways where you're not dealing with something where the work in progress is obviously transferring. And there, the boards have introduced the concept of an asset which has no alternative use to the entity, which in a way is a little bit similar to almost defining what sort of the uniqueness is that comes into the current definition of a construction contract. And the boards say that if you've got a performance obligation that doesn't create an asset with alternative use, then there might still be continuous transfer of that service to the customer in three possible ways. It might be that the customer just receives the service continuously. So, for example, a cleaning service, someone comes in, cleans every day. That's obviously transferring to the customer day by day. There's the other position where if, for some reason, the service stopped by one person, anyone taking up that service contract wouldn't have to re-perform that work. And the example given to the boards in their redeliberation was a transportation contract. If you've contracted to ship something from London to Sydney, when it gets to Calcutta, if you transfer the contract at that stage, the person taking over the contract wouldn't have to drag the goods back to London and then take them to Calcutta. They would be halfway there at that stage. They wouldn't have to re-perform. So on that basis, the benefit of that service is transferred to the customer at that stage. And then the third case, and this is a case which I think would affect a number of contracts, is the entity will have the right to payment for the work that it's done to date. So if you've created a unique asset and you have the right to payment for the work done to date, then you would say that is continuous recognition. So the approaches are quite different. Now, I think obviously the boards will want, as part of the process of finalizing the standard, to test these requirements. We have had roundtable discussions with constructors in the UK, constructors in Europe, just to look at the wording and see if it's helpful to people, if it's clear, if it'll give consistent application. We've had phone calls with Australia, people in other jurisdictions. I think in particular probably the staff do need to actually speak individually to some of the areas just to test to see how robust this thinking is. But I mean, this hasn't been a very helpful ramble through the project, I'm sure, but it's just really to hark back to Bob's point that it isn't simply a question of cutting a paragraph out of one of the board's decisions and being able to cut and paste that into IFRIC 15 to give a clarity or an answer.
Okay, thanks, April. I'll leave your mic on because I think some people are going to ask you questions, so if nobody else does, I will.
Okay.
But I think it would be helpful also if the project team could actually speak to people in the jurisdictions that seem to have been talking to us.
Well, we have actually visited them, and we've also had email and audio conferences with them, but we will pursue that.
Yeah. But the intention is to help explain the principles and the application of the principles, not to bring joy and happiness to everybody in the world by allowing them to do whatever they want. Okay, just to clarify. Ruth?
I have a couple of questions for April, but I did just want to respond to Tuck's comment about laws and jurisdictions. I think we have a big issue where a local jurisdiction issues a local interpretation and says, and by the way, this is compliant with IFRS. We know this is one of the great concerns. I'd be interested in Julie's comments on this, that the SEC is concerned about, because their belief is that IFRS is actually not a global standard because it's applied differently in every jurisdiction. And I would be very concerned if we simply accepted that each jurisdiction can interpret the standard the way it likes and issue its own interpretation, because if that's the case, then we may as well say IFRS is not a global standard. So I think we need to be a bit careful before saying let them do what they want, they can do their own thing. And that's particularly because the Singaporean situation is not different from other jurisdictions, as far as we've been told. It's similar laws in other jurisdictions, and Brazil is one of them, Korea is another. So if we say to Singapore, fine, whatever you say is fine in Singapore, there will be a rapid contagion effect, and the contagion effect will not just be in that region, it will be to South America, and then it will come to Europe, because the Europeans will say, oh, hang on, we've been applying this differently, now we see what the rest of you are doing, we're going to change back to the percentage of completion method. So I really think we need to think carefully about just saying we can let local interpretations go and leave them alone. And I would be interested in the regulator's perspective. But my question for April is, based on those principles that you articulated, which are in this paper, how would the board account for off-the-plan real estate sales? Because that's the question IFRIC 15 was asked to address. In IFRIC 15, we said, if you're a construction contract under IS 11, you go to IS 11. So I'm not too worried about John's concern about contaminating IS 11 by whatever we may or may not do. It was clear in IFRIC 15, IS 11 is its own thing. If you're in there, go there. All it had to deal with was, well, if you're not there, but you're in IS 18 because it's not a construction contract, then how do you apply the revenue recognition rules or principles? And we came up with some guidance. And my recollection of the development of IFRIC 15 was very, very far into the project, in fact, almost right at the end, this concept of continuous transfer was introduced with very, very little guidance. It was just thrown in right at the end. And I don't think we had a lot of time to work it up and to think through how it might apply. So my question really is, when testing these principles, is the board going to try and test them against off-the-plan real estate apartment sales, which is really the issue? Because I've read them, and I can't apply it. I don't know what the answer would be.
And I think probably it is something that we do need to do over the next month or two, is to get an example and put it together. I mean, we have spoken to people in Singapore, Brazil, Korea, and we've collected sort of facts about what they say they believe their conditions, their contract conditions are, just to use that as a test. I mean, it is difficult if you're dealing with a principal, obviously, because we can't come up with rules. We have to use judgment in saying, has it transferred to the customer at any given time? And we've also sat down and listened to what some of the big accounting firms believe and taken into account their points. I can't come up with a quick answer and say, you know, this is what the boards consider, because the boards haven't actually deliberated this as yet. And, you know, we do need probably to take some of these examples to the boards just to see. But I'm sure that there's no intention that we are going to actually have individually tailored implementation advice. I'm sure that all we're doing is just trying to gather examples, selection of examples, to test the basic principle itself.
Okay. If you have the time, if you can keep your comments reasonably concise, not trying to close you down, Laurence. Applies to everybody.
I think it is really important that the issues looked at under the revenue project, because beyond what means continuous transfer, it's a much broader issue about what does a transfer control mean. And particularly in those cases where you have non-cancelable contracts, where both the buyer and the seller are engaged and cannot withdraw, where you have milestone payments that are being paid, non-refundable, that reflect the activity going on, and where the seller has no ability to modify anything once the terms have been agreed up front. And it is in those situations that it is difficult to conclude whether control has passed and whether revenue should be recognized. So it ties into, I think it was Guido who was mentioning, is it sufficient that you can demonstrate that the seller has lost control, even if it's difficult to say that the buyer has got the control? So you are in this intermediary situation where you know that the seller has no control. Do you recognize revenue in such a place? And I would like that the new revenue standards address those situations.
Okay, let's not talk. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, April. Let's not talk about what you would like in the revenue recognition standard. The purpose of this is to ask April any questions that help you to either confirm your decision not to take this onto the agenda or to rethink what we might do. But either way, we've got to come out with some statement, whether it's an agenda decision or it's an agenda project that we put on. So I understand your concerns about a number of things that affect revenue generally, and transfer of control is one of them. The issue that's facing us now is IFRIC 15 and whether or not we need to do anything with that.
Yes, just quickly responding to Ruth's comment, I'm not saying that the local interpretation should be allowed. I'm not saying that interpretation can be done only by the IFRS Interpretation Committee, which is clear. However, what I'm saying is that there are countries like Singapore who has matured laws and regulations to some industries. In that case, we have to be very careful about what's the local interpretation and what's the interpretation on their own regulations, because the revenue recognition is the area which covers everything, not only just the real estate, but it may cover chemical industry or some dangerous industry or
keep
IT industry.
Concise.
Yes, just precise. So, therefore, I'm not saying that local interpretation should be allowed, but there are some interruption would be needed to connect local regulations and principle-based IFRS. And that is not the role of the IASB. It is the role of the local regulator.
Thanks. Thank you. Bob, may I? Just hang on. I'll call you in a moment, Luca.
Okay.
Another way of expressing, I think, what Ruth was saying is that a local regulator or somebody else understands their local laws, and in the case of income taxes or in the case of real estate, often those laws are not only complex but very different from other laws around the world. It's not up to us to determine whose laws apply in which way. Our concern is if the application of an IFRS or an IFRIC is in such a way that the local regulator has said, despite what the standard says, you can get this accounting. So the issue is the accounting issue. It's not the interpretation of the laws. I expect local people to understand their laws better than we ever could. Luca, good morning. Welcome to you.
Good morning to you. Now, just to add something at what Tepe said, because this situation is becoming more and more complex around the world, and I got an experience here in Italy in which the government has attributed to some part of the government the possibility to make an endorsement of IFRS standards adopted by the European Union. So, considering the relevant elements that are linked with tax declaration, with the interpretation of specific cases like this, or other cases that should be included inside a more complex law and regulation, it has started the opportunity from some states to make an own endorsement process, just to be sure that the application of some standards, in this case for the single enterprise financial statements, are in line and are homogeneous with many other laws that surround the preparation. I believe that we will face more cases like this of IFRIC 15 in the next future, and probably we should have a more direct link with the National Standard Center in order to be able to have a more clear understanding of the cases of the law coming out from a person who is in place and knowing better than us the specific rules and regulation. And on the other side, we could help them to find some solution that are in line with our interpretation. But I'm quite sure that we will have more cases like this in the next few time.
Well, thank you for those pessimistic observations, but hopefully your representatives will be at the National Standards Setters meeting in a couple of weeks' time, and that's an issue that can be discussed there. Andrew?
Mm-hmm. Just picking up on a comment Ruth made, I mean, obviously I'm concerned about local interpretations and effectively a free-for-all in the interpretation of IFRIC 15, but I think we have to recognise that what we've said so far has not eliminated diversity in practice, rightly or wrongly. And unless we can come up with a gender decision that says the answer's clear or absolute clarity, as I said before, in whatever we do with IFRIC 15, which I very much doubt, to be honest, I would rather leave it to the revenue recognition projects, and perhaps we should consider withdrawing IFRIC 15 early, such that we don't have something out there which is only honoured, which is not sorting out the problem.
If we withdraw IFRIC 15 now, then you encourage a free-for-all.
I too just wanted to comment on what Ruth said about local interpretations. I 100% agree that we should, that somebody should try to discourage local interpretations. Ruth said we because I don't see it as our role, and I see it in me not wanting to do an interpretation here. I think we've got to be very careful that we are not condoning the local interpretation that has been done. So that's the first thing I think that. But the second thing is, I have to admit, Bob, I have a little concern in terms of raw numbers for not taking it onto the agenda. And yes, I am one of those. But three of the big four, and I don't, not trying to say that the big four should have a bigger say than anybody else, but it concerns me that three of the big four do want to take it on, and that those three are the only three that want to take it on. So I'm trying to wonder whether there is some, this sounds terrible, hidden agenda, and I don't mean it in a nasty way, with the big firms as to wanting to take it on, and whether it is actually this not condoning local interpretations, because I just feel maybe the rest of us are missing out on not knowing that, because that is not usually the situation, that the only three who want to do something are three of the big four.
Well, there are no hidden agendas in the committee because everything is discussed in public, so you can listen, you can judge, you can make your own assumptions on what's happening. We are here to discuss the accounting issue that's been raised, and we make a decision based on that. Everybody has one vote. Aaron?
Well, let me start off by saying I'm not smart enough to have a hidden agenda, so...
That's the first time this meeting.
But let me just quickly thank April for that summary. It was a very good summary, and I think it just confirmed kind of my own personal view that this is a very dangerous issue to take up. I think it is part of an active board project, and I think gives the committee ample room for stating that... that reason for not taking it on the agenda. I also am concerned with scope creep. I think, as John had mentioned, being a company with a roughly $60 billion in services and hardware and software, and you know, I once was told that IBM actually stands for multiple element arrangement. I also am concerned that how this notion of continuous transfer would be very pervasive in a lot of these arrangements. So I guess I would put myself in the camp of be very careful.
Okay, thank you. Guido?
I have a question to April. She just pointed out what the thoughts of the board are, and I understand that there are two situations where the board presently could imagine that you use or that you have continuous transfer of control. One is you have a good that has no alternative use. I suspect that we would not fall under this rule in the situation that we are looking at, so the other one would be of more interest. And here it comes again. What you have said is when you control the work in progress, and my question is, are there any, and you gave some examples, some extreme examples in France where you say, yes, you have it, but I assume that as the new revenue recognition standard will be principle-based, that you will try to give some guidance what that means, controllable work in progress. And that is, I think, that is the issue that we are dealing with here. What are you thinking about indicators?
The boards are thinking about indicators, and in their tentative decision in February, they reaffirmed three of the indicators that were in the exposure draft, you know, the unconditional commitment to pay, legal title, physical possession, and they've added to those the indicators of risk and rewards, which is the articulation which hasn't been developed yet, that was just, put to the boards as useful clarification.
Okay.
Thank you. In all fairness, I think we still have to see how those indicators apply to the fact pattern of planned sales of flats. We have tested it with civil engineering companies, probably to a certain extent with software companies, I'm not aware, at least at my level, board level, that you have really tried to test it with this type of situation here. So it would be a bit premature to draw any conclusions now. Probably the staff has done more, but it has not yet been communicated to the board yet.
And only the board can take the decision. So if you know about it, then it hasn't happened. Regulator's Corner.
2 points. One, Ruth raised the question of what do regulators expect about global standards. I could just point to in the SEC's original roadmap what was said in there, which was it was understood that application issues in practice would arise. It was also understood that they often need a really timely answer, like somebody's registration statement needs to go effective and you just need an answer. And it was also understood that in the end, a regulator, you know, is responsible for what goes on in their jurisdiction. So it said, because of that, you're going to face situations where regulators are either going to decide or be involved in a decision about how application is going to go. But then, just as a practical matter of keeping the trains running. But then it also went on to say, however, then, the only way global standards are going to survive in that practical reality is if then that decision, in essence, gets fed into the ISB interpretation process, et cetera, so that it gets daylight more broadly, could be considered more broadly, and a global solution could be derived, whether it's the same one the regulator made on a, you know, instantaneous basis or whether it's a different one, so that if regulators are making instantaneous but different decisions, that's only a temporary phenomenon. That once it gets to the standard setting process, then a global answer is issued, and then that supersedes whatever individual decisions regulators have made to keep the trains running. So at least that might not be the best thinking, but that was the thinking at the time about how to marry the fact that regulators have national responsibilities and you have decisions you have to make, but also marry with the fact that if that goes on forever unabated, you're just undercutting the whole idea of global standards. Anyway, I just offer that as a bit of background. The second more pro-kill comment to this discussion is actually SC1 is, we're meeting next week, and we actually have this topic on our agenda. It's been raised for something to discuss. I mean, we do have a time to discuss IFRS issues among a variety of other topics, but this was actually one that was pointed out. So I don't know that you need any more facts to make a decision. You know, based on what we might learn in our discussion, but it is on the agenda for next week.
Okay. Well, we take it if it's on your agenda that it's something that is of more widespread concern than just one jurisdiction. Or...
Well, it doesn't take a unanimous decision to put on our agenda. I mean, if somebody wants to talk about it, we'll talk about it. So I'll know after next week how widespread. So.
Okay. Be helpful to get some feedback. Sarah?
I think the question I'd like to ask is I'm sympathetic to the discussion about not taking this on to the agenda, and I actually wrote down what folks said. So my question is, let's just say for a moment that we decide to take it onto the agenda for whatever reason. Do you think in that case we could come to a consensus? Do you think that we could address the question, given that you're not comfortable with taking it on for whatever reason? And that's an important question to me because I haven't actually made up, not that my decision matters much, but I haven't actually made up my mind whether I think this is a good idea to take on or not take on. But I'm interested to know whether you think we actually could reach a consensus. In other words, is the concern beyond just the interaction with the Revenue Recognition Project or local jurisdictions, or what, do you think we can come up with something helpful?
Maybe to answer that, we need to look at IFRIC 15. And it's really questions arise out of paragraph 17 and paragraph 18, and to ask ourselves the question of what part of these paragraphs do people not understand? And what else, if we think that the principle that's explained in there is clear, then the question that arises is one I think Scott mentioned earlier of do we need some implementation guidance to help people how to understand to apply that in a particular fact pattern? And it has been the tendency of this committee not to give implementation guidance. Scott?
Just to respond to Sarah's question, I think if we have enough information about facts, yeah, we could come to a conclusion, but I think it would only be for that set of facts, which is why I'm afraid it's implementation guidance. Paragraph 29 of the paper says, because of the involvement of those relevant authorities, constituents in those jurisdictions find it difficult to conclude whether control lies with the developer or with the buyer. Well, we would need all the facts of the law to reach a conclusion, but I suspect we could in a particular situation. But we'd have to do it jurisdiction by jurisdiction. If all we need to do is clarify whether control needs to go to the buyer or just leave the seller and go to some third party, we'd probably come to a conclusion on that as well. I don't think that's going to resolve all the questions, because my sense is that in some of these jurisdictions, they're going to have trouble determining whether control has passed from the seller to the regulator or from the seller to the buyer. And then we'll be right back, kind of in the same spot again. So my sense is we could answer the question, but I don't know that we'd come up with anything broadly applicable. So we'd be just giving implementation guidance for whoever's laws we were looking at. And those of you who have laws that are similar but not the same, well, use this and see what you can do with it.
Ruth?
Yeah, just in response to Joanna's question and also to Sarah's, there's no hidden agenda. The issue is local interpretations that are emerging and diversity that's emerging as a result. That's the concern. It's really difficult to be an auditor in circumstances where there's a local interpretation in one jurisdiction that says apply percentage completion and in another jurisdiction apply completed contract, and the facts and circumstances are identical. So that's the reason. In response to Sarah's question, I think that even if we don't take it onto the agenda, which it seems we won't, we need to do an agenda decision. So we're going to have to agree on something in the agenda decision, and maybe it is as limited as looking at the very limited issue of do protective rights mean that control has transferred? Seems to me we could answer that question. So maybe that's what we address in the agenda decision and leave it at that.
Okay. We've talked around this for a long time. What I have now a sense of is that there isn't an overwhelming appetite to take this onto the agenda, but clearly we have to make some conclusions on this. There is a central concern, which is not an interpretive issue, in the sense it's not a technical accounting interpretive issue, and that is the right or the interference of, depending on how you look at it, local jurisdictions to make their own interpretations that say that a particular treatment is in compliance with IFRS, as opposing to give a particular treatment or clarification, perhaps, to the laws or the economic environment in which the entity operates that enables judgment to be exercised by the entities in determining whether there is compliance or not. And I have to say I'm somewhat surprised that in the face of the mighty intellect of the IFRS desks spread around this city, that local jurisdictions with the participation of partners of the same firm who presumably have consulted the IFRS desks have come to a conclusion that is different from your view, that something needs to be reconsidered in the process. It may be, of course, that they were outvoted, so I'm not going to comment on the decision-making process down there. However, that is not the issue that the Interpretations Committee can deal with. That's an issue that Alan and others will perhaps raise at the National Standards Setters meeting of a matter of concern, it's going to be discussed at an IOSCO subcommittee meeting as an issue of what regulators should and shouldn't do in terms of interpreting IFRS. But our standards are clear, that there is only one body that is authorized to issue authoritative interpretations of IFRS, and that's this committee. And that's not something that I think there is any lack of clarity about. So turning back to this question now, I think the explanation that April has given about where the board's process is now, and that's been echoed by Philippe, is that the decisions that have been taken tentatively are not to be considered to be complete and final, and that there are still some perhaps further investigations and considerations as to the applicability of the indicators, the application requirements in the RevRec standard. And so there is nothing available for us to cut and paste and put into our interpretation. I haven't heard anybody saying that we really do. Well, I've heard one or two, I suppose, Guido, who've raised some concerns about the notion of continuous transfer, but the way that it's written in IFRIC 15 is at a high level, perhaps a principle-based level, that might only be made clearer in some jurisdictions if we were to give some implementation guidance. If there was some general application guidance that we could give, then that might be something that's worth thinking about. So my suggestion at this stage is that we first of all confirm that we will not take this on as an interpretive project, and if that is the case, then we have to decide how to word the agenda decision. And so you can see the whole picture at one stage. My suggestion would be that we don't decide today what our tentative decision is going to be, but we get further input from both the board and from the IOSCO group, if that's permissible. We may not quote you directly, but it would be helpful to know the views of your subcommittee, and also the board's consideration, which I think we've suggested in two ways. One is for the board to consider whether these requirements in the revenue recognition standard are going to remain as they currently have been drafted, and also the consultation that April mentioned with some of the specific jurisdictions as to whether or not the then revised proposals in the RevRec project would, well, it certainly will address the situation in these jurisdictions, but whether it will bring them joy and happiness is perhaps something that we need to understand. And that there seems to be little point in pursuing something to try and accommodate a jurisdiction if, in fact, it reinforces an answer that's the answer that they don't want. We can explain, I think, as Andrew has pointed out, we can explain things as much as we want, but ultimately, if people really don't like it and really don't feel that they have to comply with IFRS, then they won't do that, and then that becomes a matter for the auditors and the regulators. So that's what I would propose. So if we can turn to the first question, who objects to not taking this item onto the Interpretations Committee's agenda? Three. Okay. So we'll not do that. And does anybody have any thoughts or any comments or any criticisms about delaying our agenda decision until the next meeting? We will have to obviously publish in the IFRIC update at this stage that we have addressed the issue, that we can refer to the fact that the wording, and I think, you know, it's the wording of IFRIC 15 that is relevant, not the wording of IS 18 in this particular case, because we're dealing specifically with accounting for real estate transactions, and there is an IFRS that deals specifically with those, so we don't have to revert to the analogy for IS 18 to look at whether or not we think the accounting might be different. This specifies in the paragraphs that I referred to how you deal with it in certain circumstances. So if control is transferred on a continuous basis, or if control is only transferred at the end, and that takes into account risks and rewards, then that's the determination you make, and these paragraphs then specify what the accounting consequence of that is, either, as it were, completed contract or a form of percentage of completion. Okay. I suggest we take a break to stretch our legs 15 minutes, and then we'll come back and